Perfect Stranglers contains graphic and explicit content suitable for mature listeners. Listener discretion is advised.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Perfect Stranglers. This is Kylie.
And I'm Bree.
And we're recording at night, which is weird as shit.
Yeah, it is a little weird.
We haven't recorded at night in quite some time.
Nope, but it's kind of rainy here, actually.
Yeah?
Yeah.
It's a little rainy. Like spring rain. Like, it's like that right. Kind of gloomy spring weather.
Right. Just kind of makes you want to stay home, curled up with a good book.
Yeah, like Ice Planet Barbarians, where you can learn about alien dicks with spurs.
It's also perfect for ghost stories, you know?
It is. It is perfect for ghost stories. It is. I agree. Can I tell you about my newest book obsession on Kylie's Book Corner?
Yeah.
Because I power through these things like it's my job. It's not my job. However, me and my boss at work, we read the same book, so we talk about it. Anyway. So, I know a few of you that listen know what books I'm talking about, because Sarah J. Maas, she just owns my soul at this point. So, I got through A Court of Thorns and Roses series. I just had such a book hangover because Cassian is life. And then I read From Blood and Ash, all of the books that are out right now, and it's fairy, fantasy, drama, romance type thing. They're really good, action, just like really good. Okay, but I need Sarah J. Maas, the author of A Court of Thorns and Roses. So I started reading Crescent City, which is it's a different series, but it's still in like the fae, action, drama, romance area. The first book, Brie, the first book was 27 hours long.
No.
And I'm not in these fairy like fantasy books. I like when they are like, they seem like they're from like old times, like they are not modern. They don't have cell phones. They're not going to get tea at a tea shop with oat milk. You know what I mean?
Oat milk.
Speaking of oat milk, I went on a how do you say it?
Oat.
Oat.
Oat. That's how you say it.
Okay, let me hold on. Okay, I went on a date with a guy and we were talking about cows. And
okay.
Talking about cows, and he was like, "What?" And I said, "A cow." And he's
a
like,
cow.
"No, no, no, no." And he's like, "I cannot describe it any other way than you like wrap your O's around the word, like you wrap your O's."
Yeah.
And I was like, "Okay," and I was like, "You say it," and he's like, "Cow,
cow."
And I was like, "No, no, no." And he's like, "Then he said, get this. He's like, say it in your native tongue."
All right.
I was like, is it that foreign to you? And he's like, I don't know why it came out that way, but it did, and I just fucking lost it. Oh my god. Anyway, back to the book. Oh, they like, you know, they don't go and get oat milk lattes or whatever. But in Crescent City, it's based in, like, modern times, so they, like, do go to, like, tea shops, and they have cell phones and all this shit. But I still like it. So if you guys want a good book rack, if you like action, maybe a little fantasy, romance, drama, Crescent City. It's a long, thick-ass book, but I promise to the gods it's worth it. It is so good. And that's my book corner for today.
It would have to be really good for me to get through that thick of a book.
There's something about the way that Sarah J. Maas writes that she the stories and like the build up to the story, the big things that are going to happen, and all of the mythology that you have to build in these series, especially for book one, it can get really complicated. And in From Blood and Ash, which is a different author, it was just really complicated, and she didn't build the story and the mythology up in like a digestible way, but the way Sarah J. Maas does it, it's super easy to understand, and I think that makes it far more digestible and more enjoyable to read.
Is it a book where you have to read/listen to it for like a big, like a good chunk at a time? Like you can't take little half hour, 15 minute type things?
No.
Because you're going to, like, miss stuff or you're going to forget it? Is it that type of a book?
I wouldn't say you forget it, but a lot of, like, the chapters themselves... The chapters themselves are broken up into small little bits of things happening in different people's perspectives, so you can break it up. But all of those different perspectives happening in one chapter cumulate into one giant thing happening in one chapter, if that makes sense. So you can do that as long as you, like, really pay attention to what you're reading.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, highly recommend. And you guys, I am so sorry, but since it's nighttime and I am who I am, I'm going to take a bite of my quesadilla. Mm-hmm. Do you want to do housekeeping?
Oh, yeah. Okay. So...
Oh, yeah. In your native tongue.
Don't forget to like and rate our podcast on Apple Podcasts and also on Spotify. Also, we would like to get your... your ratings. I said that already. Also, don't forget to subscribe to us on whatever platform that you listen to us on so that you never miss an episode. And also, we want to hear from you on our social media. We have Facebook, which we post on regularly, as well as Instagram. And give us a shout out on Twitter. We also want to hear your weird stories of true things that have happened to you. So please email us at contact@perfectstranglers.com. And while you're at it, please check out our website at perfectstranglers.com.
Right on. You know what's a highly underestimated thing is a quesadilla. Why don't people make quesadillas at home often? Like, I don't feel like people do.
Yeah, I don't know, because they are pretty simple. I was gifted a quesadilla maker where it's like, mm-hmm. you know, like two hot plates that, like, you squish together. But I found it to be unnecessary.
Yes.
Because it's actually a lot easier to just make it in a pan, and also, like, easier just to clean the pan than it is to clean the quesadilla maker. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're super easy to make. They're super affordable. You can make it vegan. You can make it vegetarian. You can fill it with whatever you want. You can top it with shit, and it's a whole ass meal.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
Like, I just don't understand why more people don't make quesadillas. And maybe they do, and I'm just missing out. Or I just don't know about it. I don't know.
Yeah.
But yeah, fucking love a good quesadilla. All right, so we can go two directions today. I'm going to let you choose your own adventure, okay?
Oh my God, I love those books.
Okay,
Your own adventure books?
Yes. I'm going to let you choose your own adventure. Awesome. Do you want to hear a scary story? Or do you, well, they're both, like, disturbing. But not like normal Kylie. Well, one of them is. Do you want to hear a ghosty story or do you want to hear a true crime story?
Ghosty.
The ghosty story is... Okay, good. So the ghosty story is short. So then you have a personal story by proxy that you need to tell at the end of this one.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. All right. Let me go ahead and zoom in because I am a geriatric human being. All right. I'll gather around. Wouldn't that be cool if Nicole could put in, like, grasshoppers and, like, crackling fire, and it was, like, a ghost story?
Like a campfire, like Jim Harold's Campfire, which is a really good podcast, and I highly recommend it.
Yes, and Radio Rental. If you guys haven't never listened to that, I highly recommend.
Ooh, yeah, that's our favorite.
Yeah, that is. That is, like, our podcast favorite podcast is Radio Rental, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it started out as my favorite murder, but nah.
No,
this one's better, if you ask
can
me.
Can I give an unpopular opinion? I'm not really a huge fan of My Favorite Murder.
I'm not, okay, like, the first couple of, like, seasons were really cool and awesome, and it's totally got me hooked on, like, true crime podcasts, but, like, I'm not enjoying it as much anymore.
Right.
And haven't listened to it in a while.
Mm-hmm. Yep, same. Now, Small Town Murder, you guys. I guess we're going to be pimping out other podcasts. If you've never listened to Small Town Murder, it is a fantastic freaking podcast. It is two guys, two comedians, and I will say that they, like, My Favorite Murder and That's Why We Drink, Wine and Crime, they're all very PC. They're all very politically correct, all of that stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
My Favorite Murder, they... don't make fun of the victims, but they make fun of the shit that happens around it. And they say, we are assholes, but we're not scumbags, which is like perfect. And they say exactly what you're thinking regarding like possibly not PC shit. Like they say what you're thinking and you're like, thank God somebody had to say it because that is really inappropriate, but it's fucking funny. So if you're like me and don't really care and just want to hear two awesome comedians talk about the most disturbing murders you've ever heard in your life that you've never heard of, listen to Small Town Murder.
Okay.
Yeah, they're cool. Long, very long episodes, but that is my favorite true crime podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's good for driving if you have long drives to do.
Oh, it is. I do.
Mm-hmm. Just carry you. Yeah.
I just love that podcast so freaking much. Okay. Sorry, I took another bite of my quesadilla because that was a long stretch. Without fuel. Okay. Ghost stories. Today, we're going to be talking about Annabelle the doll.
Cool.
So, if you don't know what that is, if you've ever seen The Conjuring or The Conjuring 2 or heard of the movie Annabelle, it's that creepy fucking doll that you see that looks like a porcelain doll with dirt all over her and she's looking at you like she's going to kill you, but she's dead in the eye. That's her.
Yes. So, but that's not what the real Annabelle looks like, correct?
No, it's not. Right. And you know what I thought about this? I'll get to what the Annabelle the doll looks like, and then I'm going to have to ask my mom for pictures of something. Because...
Uh-huh.
Do you know what I'm going to say?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's get to this, and then we'll talk about it. Okay, so this is an Ed and Lorraine Warren story. Okay, so we're going to get into the Warrens' history, and we've talked about it a little bit, but we're going to dig in. So, Edward Warren Minnie, M-I-N-E-Y, Miney? Minnie. Miney? Mo.
Good enough. Love it. Okay.
And God, we should record at night more often when there's whiskey involved. Okay. And Lorraine Rita Warren. I mean, you could drink whiskey at 7 a.m. I'm not against it. But Lorraine Rita. Okay. Ed and Lorraine Warren were paranormal investigators who investigated like the most prominent and well-known cases of paranormal activity that you know of, not only in the U.S., but like throughout the world. So Ed was a self-taught and self-professed, quote, demonologist, author, and lecturer. I never knew that he wasn't, I guess I assumed that he was never an actual, like, ordained, I guess, I don't know if ordained's the right word, but, like, approved by the Vatican demonologist. He just said he was a demonologist because he did all the work. And I feel like that's the equivalent of doing an apprenticeship to do hair, but you don't have the license.
Yeah.
So, like, maybe I could buy it. Yeah. I don't know.
So, like, he's not affiliated with any specific church or anything. He's just,
just is into demons.
Right. For years.
Mm-hmm. He's seen some shit, so he can help some shit. Lorraine was a self-professed clairvoyant and a light trance medium. So she worked really closely with her husband, Ed, to investigate paranormal activity. And generally the stuff that they investigated and the stuff that we know about was demonic in nature. So in 1952, the Warrens founded the New England Society for Psychic Research, NESPR for short. It is the oldest ghost hunting group in New England. And according to the Warrens and the official website for NESPR, and a shit ton of other sources, NESPR commonly uses, I believe they're still active to this day, but they don't just use Ed and Lorraine Warren, or when they were alive, they don't just use them and call it good. They actually use a lot of different individuals from a lot of different fields. So medical doctors, historical researchers, law enforcement, police officers, nurses, college students to assist, and members of the clergy in their investigations. So they get input from a lot of different people to solidify what they're talking about. They also wrote a lot of books about the paranormal and about their private investigations into all of the paranormal activity that they were immersed in. They claimed that they investigated well over 10,000 cases during their career. And the Warrens were... like, if you've never listened to our Amityville episode, it's in the first season. It's like halfway through the first season. But we talked about them there. But they were one of the first investigators in the Amityville haunting. And that's kind of just the tip of the iceberg when it comes to not only their paranormal investigation, but the films that they've inspired. So I'm going to break her down for you and give you the list. So they did Amityville and the subsequent films from both 1997 and 2005. You know, the one with Ryan Reynolds on the roof in the rain shirtless? That one.
Yep.
In case we're questioning that. I don't find Ryan Reynolds to be attractive.
He's all right.
He's guy hot. He's guy hot. Like, he's what all straight men, straight white men find attractive. I just don't get it. You know? I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway. And then in 1991, a two-hour made-for-TV movie based on the Smurl haunting called The Haunted came out. And then The Haunting in Connecticut from 2009 was loosely based on the 1986 investigation of the Snedker House. So the Snedker haunting. And then we have the Conjuring series. So the entire Warren case file serves as the basis for all of those movies and like the spinoffs. The most notable haunting is that of Annabelle the Doll. Oops. Annabelle the Doll, which we're going to be talking about today. So let's chat about her. So the doll in the movie, like we said, is a scary as hell looking porcelain doll. It's supposed to look like basically a little girl with pigtails and long hair. Honestly, kind of reminds me of Sally from the Sally House.
Mm-hmm.
Only like dirty. Yeah.
Right.
She dirty, has a creepy smile on her face and like those dead ass eyes. The real Annabelle, the one in the Warren's Museum to this day, is just a plain looking classic Raggedy Ann doll with red yarn for hair. Now, my mom, no, not my mom, my mom has a picture, but my grandma dressed me up as Raggedy Ann, and my brother dressed him up as Andy, and my grandma volunteered at an old folks home back home in La Crosse, and my great-grandma was there for quite some time, and so my grandma, my great-grandma's mom, would take my brother and myself and take us to this old folks home dressed up and in costumes, and like we would basically entertain and be there for the old people to be like around cute little dressed up kids, and they would throw parties. They had a luau once, and my great uncle, they were wearing like grass shirts and coconut bras and stuff, so my grandma would basically throw parties for these old people, and she would dress us up in the theme of whatever party it was and like bring us there. And so I know that I have a picture of me dressed as Annabelle.
Yeah.
Basically.
That's so funny. Yeah.
And it's weird. Like, I can still smell the smell of her, of my grandma's basement and the costume box that she had. You know what I mean? Like, that nostalgic, just, it doesn't smell like anything, like good. It smells like basement, you know what I mean? But I can still smell the smell of what the costume smelled like.
Uh-huh. Cute.
It's so weird. But yeah, now I think back and I'm like, damn, I'm dressed as Annabelle, ain't I?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. All right. So the real Annabelle was given to a nursing student by the name of Donna as a gift for her 28th birthday. Yes.
What?
She was gifted a doll at the age of 28. Because she liked dolls. I don't listen.
When did the Raggedy Ann doll like start being a thing?
Raggedy Ann was invented in 1915.
Okay.
So the doll that the mom purchased was from a secondhand store. So this doll already had some bad juju attached to it. Okay. Was not fresh out the box. Anyway, so she got it from her mom for her 28th birthday in 1970. So Donna at this time, a whole ass adult with a doll, was living with her friend Angie at the time, her roommate, and Donna was super stoked to be getting this doll as a gift at first. She kept the doll in her bed in her apartment, and she shared this apartment with her roommate Angie. All was fine and dandy. There was just like, she would make her bed and then set the doll on top of her bed, like I picture against, like on the pillow against either the wall or the bed frame. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And Donna kept the doll always in the same place every day in the apartment that she shared. But after a few weeks of having this doll, the roommate began to notice kind of some weird things happen. The first red flag that both women noticed was the positioning of the doll. So Donna arrived home from work a few days in a row to find Annabelle positioned differently than how she first like left her. At first, these occurrences seemed like they were nothing, And both Angie and Donna just kind of brushed them off, like, okay, well, maybe we're just, like, mistaken. And that was all, like, explainable to them until one day when Donna came home to find Annabelle in a completely different room of the house than she had been left in. And that really creeped them out because they didn't think that anyone really got into the house because nothing else was taken, nothing was rummaged through. It's just that the doll was in a different room. Mm-hmm. So after that occurrence, the roommates really began to grow really, like, freaked out and wary of this doll. So at that point, Donna and Angie weren't the only ones that sensed that something was a little bit strange. They had a close friend named Lou, and Lou really urged them to get rid of Annabelle after insisting that the doll gave him a really bad feeling. So a few days after Lou's confession of this, Donna found pieces of paper lying around the apartment with the messages "Help Us" and "Help Lou" written on them.
That's weird.
But even after these occurrences, yeah, and these pieces of paper were found around the house, Donna decided to keep Annabelle. If you've ever, I think it's Conjuring. I think it's The Conjuring. I think it's the first one where the pieces of paper are left throughout the house. So,
what year did you say that this was, or around
this happened in 1970.
Okay.
So Donna and Angie didn't take action against Annabelle's behaviors at all, even with, like, small things building up, until one day when they discovered drops of what appeared to be blood on Annabelle's hands. So after this, Angie and Donna contacted a medium. Well, the medium told them that the spirit of a 7-year-old girl named Annabelle was living inside of this doll, and the medium believed that the body of the girl had been discovered near Donna and Angie's apartment before it was built. So what she's saying is the doll inherently didn't have anything wrong with it, but when that doll was placed into the house, that little girl spirit saw the doll, said, "I want that," and then Donna didn't do anything about it, and basically they're just letting all of these things happen. So the medium felt that Donna and Angie had made the little girl feel loved by allowing her to do all of these little things and not really thinking too much of it, and she said that they thought the Donna and Angie welcomed the little girl into their home. So after hearing this, Donna felt really bad for the little girl and gave her permission to live inside the doll, enabling the demon inside Annabelle.
Oh my God.
Either Annabelle came equipped with a demon and this little girl kind of perpetuated the hauntings to start up and all hell break loose, or this little girl that this medium was seeing wasn't actually a little girl at all. It had always been a demon, and they just invited this demon into their home and into this doll.
Yeah.
Because as we know, demons commonly disguise themselves as little girls.
Yes.
Yes. So either way, Donna and Angie invited it, specifically Donna.
Man.
Just don't. Just don't, people. Like, ew. You would say that. Sorry, I just had to get it out of my system. it just sometimes, like, creeps up on me, you know? So yeah. After a long Annabelle's, what'd you say?
Said yeah. Sometimes it does.
Thank you. It really does. You just say, you ever get the need to, like, say something really stupid out of nowhere, just, like, to yourself? Yeah. Just, like, get it out? Yeah. That's me with you, David. I don't know. Anyway. So after allowing Annabelle's spirit to overtake their whole apartment, a lot of other strange things started to happen. One night, Lou was staying over at Donna and Angie's home when he woke up in a state of sleep paralysis. He then watched Annabelle crawl up his leg and begin to strangle him.
Oh, no. No, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Would you rather have that happen with...
How much strength did she have, though? She's stuffed with cotton.
I don't know, but if a demon is in it, I imagine...
She doesn't have fingers.
I know, but I can strangle you with a cotton t-shirt if I wanted to, if I pull hard enough.
Okay. I have a short story. It's a Raggedy Ann doll story.
Okay. Okay.
Okay. When I was, like, 4 years old, I colored with pen on top of my, like, play register, like, play cashier. Mm-hmm. And my parents came, and it's documented on home video. My parents being like, "Bree, who colored on the top of this register?" And I don't think that my sister, I don't even know if my sister was born yet. but she certainly wasn't old enough to be, like, drawing on the top of a play register. And I'm like,
yeah.
She did it. And I'm pointing out my Raggedy Ann doll.
God, Bree.
She did it. And I'm gonna spank her.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And my dad's like, yeah, no, she didn't do it. She doesn't have thumbs. And so that's why it reminded me, like, when the doll is gonna strangle him, she doesn't have fingers.
Oh my God. I like how that's the deciding factor. She doesn't have thumbs. And that's that. That's
that. She can't hold a pen. She doesn't have thumbs.
How could she possibly strangle you if you do? She can't even hold a fucking pen. Come on.
Yeah, right.
I love it so much. Okay, so oh my God. So on another occasion, Lou and Angie heard really loud noises coming from Donna's room. So they went into the room and they found Annabelle laying on the floor. So Lou approached the doll and then suddenly, like, doubled over in pain. And his shirt was instantly covered in blood, and he opened it up to reveal really large scratch marks, like, on his stomach.
Weird. Did it say, were there three scratches, possibly?
I didn't find the three, but I'm gonna say that there was three, because it just... Mm-hmm. We know how this works. There's likely three. Yeah. So after this occurrence, Donna contacted a priest who directed them to demonologist Ed and then the lovely Lorraine Warren. So the Warrens told Donna that Annabelle was not possessed. It instead was being manipulated by a demonic spirit. So there was nothing inherently in the doll. It was just like being controlled by a demon.
So they're saying it wasn't stuck in the doll. It just used the doll at will.
Yes, basically. Okay. Yes. So, but when the doll is walking around, the demon is, like, inside the doll.
Yeah.
But the doll itself isn't the haunted.
It doesn't live
there. The doll itself isn't the haunted piece. It's the demon that's inhabiting it from time to time.
Okay.
Yeah. So after realizing how dangerous her doll was, Donna asked the Warrens to remove it from her house. But the Warrens, taking ownership of Annabelle, really started to anger this demon. So on the drive home with Annabelle, the Warrens claimed that their car kept swerving and the brakes would randomly fail when they took the demon away from the house.
Wow. That's scary.
And until the day that they died, pretty much, because Ed and Lorraine are not living, the day that they died, they claimed that this Annabelle case was the scariest, most dangerous, like, god-awful case that they have ever encountered. Like, this is it.
Yeah.
So these are the things that happened to people around Annabelle. There's three major encounters. One, a priest from Hartford once visited the Warrens' home and threw the doll across the room, proclaiming that God was more powerful than the devil. But on his way back to the rectory, he got into a really serious car accident with a tractor trailer. And the last thing that this priest saw was Annabelle in his rearview mirror.
Really?
I guess. That's what he says.
Okay.
That's what he says, guys. I'm just delivering the news. Okay.
That's both terrifying and kind of funny.
I know. It's like in a movie. It's like a movie. Yeah. In another encounter that happened decades ago, a museum visitor ignored the warnings and banged on the doll's box. So, at this point, after Ed and Lorraine took this doll with them, what they did is they put it in a giant glass case where it still is housed to this day. It has a tarot card on it, and it has a warning label on it saying you're not supposed to look Annabelle in the eye, look at her at your own risk, like, all of the things. You're not supposed to touch the case. Don't talk to the case. You're not supposed to, like, interact with this thing at all. And by it being in this case, it's supposed to hopefully house the demon that inhabits it or that manipulates it. But still, the surrounding area of this demon still gets affected. And a priest actually comes by to this day still and blesses the area. So there's a museum, their museum that they have, and the paranormal investigation business or whatever that they had, it's still up and running. Their son owns it, or manages it now. And I watch an interview with him, and they literally do have a priest come by and bless the area, bless the room that it's in, like, often, just to keep everything at bay. Their daughter, Ed and Lorraine's daughter, was told from the time that she knew about Annabelle to never go in that room, never look at it, don't look it in the eye, don't interact with it, nothing. And to this day, the daughter will not look at Annabelle.
Yeah, I wouldn't either.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
So she kind of requires some, like, maintenance.
She's a high-maintenance bitch.
Yeah.
She's temperamental. Yeah. She's kind of a socialite, if you ask me. Anyway, so...
So they kind of, like, manage to, like, capture the demon in the doll, apparently?
They must have. They must have managed it. So the way I see it is that a demon isn't living in the doll. It's manipulating it, but the demon has to be around the doll to manipulate it. So,
yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, this story. Museum visitor ignored the warnings and banged on the doll's box, while the man was taunting Annabelle and saying that he didn't believe it to be true, basically asking to be harmed by Annabelle or the demonic spirit inhabiting it. Well, on this guy's way home, it's said that the man lost control of the motorcycle he was on, and he actually ended up getting into an accident and dying on his way home from the museum. So, yeah, to this day, Annabelle is still kicking in that glass case with that warning up front. And, yeah, I think there was an episode of BuzzFeed Unsolved where they went and visited Annabelle.
Sounds right.
And Sean was, like, taunting it. Sean was taunting her.
Shane?
So, that's... did I say Sean?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, Shane. Sorry. I haven't watched that show in forever. So, yeah, that's my story on Annabelle.
Nice.
Yeah. Nice little shorty. Now, you have a story for us, don't you?
I have a ghost story. It is from my husband. Finally, like, I'd always ask him, like, so do you have any ghost stories that I can tell on the podcast? He'd be like, no, I don't. Or he'd be like...
Oh, Manny.
Yeah, or he'd be like, well, I do, but I don't want to talk about it. So then I'd be like, well, now you have to tell me, because it sounds like it's a really good story. And so...
Yes.
So he finally told me about it one day. So.
Wait, does he know that you're telling it?
Yeah, he does.
Okay.
He would not come on the podcast, and he would not let me record him saying his story. So this is his story from secondhand. Okay. So he was like probably about, I want to say he was probably about like, between the ages of like 10 and 12 in this story. He was at a friend's house staying over, and his friend had a bunk bed, and they were playing video games, and he was in the top bunk laying on his stomach with the controller. Friend was in the bottom and also playing. I don't know what. If I had to guess, I'd probably say the system there, this doesn't matter, but just for, like, so you can picture it. I think it was probably a Nintendo 64, if I had to guess.
Mm, yeah, I think that's a good guess.
Yeah, just from the time frame. So, staying over at his friend's house, playing video games, he falls asleep, like, playing the video games. Like in the top bunk. So, in his dream... when he falls asleep, there's a man, he's in the dream, he's like in the room that he's in at his friend's house on the top bunk. Mm-hmm. And there's a man who comes into the friend's room and crawls up on the top bunk and like flips him over because he fell asleep on his stomach playing the video game. And in the dream, the guy comes in, flips him over onto his back on the top bunk in the bed and starts strangling him.
And like to Manny, this was a solid man, like a solid human man.
Yep. Like a guy coming in and like an older man with like a scary face. And he started strangling him And he felt, like, in his dream, he felt like he was being strangled and choked and, like, he could not breathe. And so he woke up feeling, like, strangled or whatever. And I, at this point in his story, I'm like, so when you woke up, like, did you have, like, the covers up to your neck and that's what you felt like you were was strangling you? And he's like, no, I fell asleep with no covers on, just in my clothes, because I just fell asleep like I was just, like, playing video games, and then I just fell asleep. So, but, and he woke up he woke up on his back like he was in the dream.
That is so bizarre.
So, after that, he woke up his friend, and he was like, oh my god, there was a guy, like, strangling me in my dream, and, like, it was so scary and whatever. And he got up out of the bed, and he went to go into the hallway to go to the bathroom, to find the bathroom, and he looks up and he sees a framed picture on the wall that he, like, walked past a million times, and it's this old man, and he's like, that is the guy who was strangling me in my dream.
I have chills.
And because his friend was like, that's my grandfather.
I have chills.
So that's his experience with ghosts.
Manny, and you kept that to yourself?
Yeah. So,
oh my god.
And I think that, like, a couple of times, like, I think he's experienced, like, a sleep paralysis type thing, like, since then a couple of times.
Yeah.
Not often, but.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
Oh, that's scary.
Yeah. I'd be scared.
Wow.
I wouldn't want to sleep there again. Wow. I don't think he did sleep there again.
No, like, how could you?
Right?
Oh my god. Well, Manny, you can tell him that gave me chills.
Yeah.
Because that's just fucking insane.
Yeah.
It is insane.
It's a weird one.
Yeah. How did he go so long without telling you?
I don't know.
You know what I mean? Like, it must have really traumatized him if he, like, didn't want to tell his wife.
Yeah. Yeah. So long.
My life.
Oh, honestly, I think that's probably one of, like, the least scary stories that has probably happened to him, to be honest with you, because he's had, like,
do you know life, any,
like, no, like, he's had, like he's seen some shit living in New York.
Yeah
So
god, Manny would be such a cool person to talk to on the podcast, but if only he were a cool person enough to actually say, yeah, I'll be on the podcast.
Yeah. No, Manny. He's like a CIA person. He just won't say anything.
Oh my god. I'm annoyed, but I respect it. I respect the mystery that is Manny. Manny's mystery is. I respect it. Oh my god, but if we ever, like, did a spinoff and he's like, fine, I'll do it, can we call it Manny's Mysteries?
Yeah. For sure.
Okay. Tell him the idea, like, pitch it, and then see what he says.
Okay. I don't think it's going to go well, but I'll try.
No, it's not going to go well. He's going to be like, tell her to shut up. Well, that was a fun little short one.
Yeah.
I liked it.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Well, if you have any ghost stories that you'd want to tell us that are similar to Bree's husband, shoot us an email, contact@perfectstranglers.com, and let us know, or you can DM us on Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter, and we will read them on the pod for you. And yeah, that's all I got to say on that. We will talk to you next Thursday.
Awesome. Talk to y'all later. See you on the flippity flap.